Since 1981, Justin has been producing world-class Bordeaux-style wines from Paso Robles on the California Central Coast. As a pioneer of the region, Justin Wines helped put Paso Robles on the winemaking map. The Justin team believes the wine should be exceptional in every aspect, which is why they use boutique winemaking practices like hand harvesting and hand sorting. With a rich history of accolades, Justin is proud to produce exceptional wines and hold the title of America's number one luxury Cabernet. Whether you're a first-time wine drinker or a seasoned aficionado, Justin has the perfect wine for every occasion. Visit justinwine.com and enter promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off your order. Justin Wines also makes the perfect holiday gifts for clients, colleagues, friends, or family. Don't miss out. Visit justinwine.com and use the promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off for a limited time.
All sales are based off of articulation of value. And in order to be able to articulate or provide value, you have to know and give people more of what they like or take away what they don't like. So obviously the old basics of trust and like are important because the credibility of what you do is so important. Credibility is the most important thing in everything you do in sales. Why? Because if ever you were 100% credible, which nobody has ever achieved, but if you were 100% credible, I guess some cult people are, all you would do is tell people, hey man, give me $1 million, I'll give you $2 million at the end of the month. And they would say yes, if you were 100% credible. Most people forget about how important credibility is, and so they oversell, back-end sell, lie, manipulate, and cheat. And the instant someone catches you overselling, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, or cheating, you have ruined your credibility, and they go from listening to the value and believing the value, or at least trying to learn the value you're going to convey or articulate them, to looking for only where you're lying, cheating, and manipulating, even where you're not. They become extremely resistant. And so one of the key first lessons of understanding how to thrive in sales, and thriving in sales is simply building a community of customers, vendors, internal employees, building a community of people in your business that buy from you and sell for you for life. If you can build a community of people around you that buy from you and sell for you for life, your job is really easy as a salesperson. It builds all the components of selling, and that's what our mission is in sales, is to thrive. I want a ton of people that buy from me and sell for me. And that was my whole mission in building a community, in building my own brand, is to do that. Ambassadors, not followers. And so you want those ambassadors. And we do that with 5 steps in selling to thrive. And so I don't like to take questions in these things at the end, so just interrupt me because I don't understand what I'm saying. You understand what I'm saying. It's not what I say, it's what you hear. And I definitely know from having 4 children, what I say is not what people hear. So please just interrupt me and don't feel intimidated, ignorant, stupid. There are no stupid questions. There's just a stupid teacher, and I haven't articulated it correctly if you don't understand it. So it's on me. Please ask me, I'll repeat it, say it in a different way, because I want you to get this, because this shit works. I promise you. I have every way to make you more successful and make it easier for you to understand what goes on in a sale today of giving more value to someone or by giving them what they like or taking away what they don't like. So the first step in sales is what? Stimulate interest. You got to get somebody interested. Now, that has changed today because every person you know has a minimum of 1,000 people in their community. Every person today, it's not the church group or the card room or the, you know, men's group, women's group. It's not the golf group. It's not the bridge group. No, it's everybody, whoever you're with. So the whole strategy of stimulating interest is different because we can reach so many people. Some of you are a little older than others. So it used to take me a month to get into contact with 1,000 people. It now takes me less than 2 seconds. So why and how does that change business? Well, one, it changes what I'm looking for, because instead of looking and utilizing solution selling to see exactly what you need and how I can fulfill that need and articulate the value of what you need, et cetera, it really, in stimulating interest, is, do you know anyone that could help me? Because exponentially, I want to know if you know someone that could help me. That's all I'm trying to get at. Because if I find someone that can help me, then I can derive what would it help them if I did this, which is articulate value of what they like or they don't like. So what is the key to stimulating interest today? There's only one thing that you want to stimulate interest for: getting someone to get back to you. That's different than it used to be. You don't need to stimulate interest of building a vision that this is going to be the great. You just want an opportunity to transition interest, because there's so many people that I know that I can double your sales today without you being better at sales, without you articulating any value differently, whether you learn one thing or not. If I double the amount of people that get back to you, this is math. If I double the amount of people that get back to you, you will double your sales with the exact same technique you're using today. The thing is, we can do much better than just double the amount of people that we get back to when we get intentional about getting people to get back to us. When we start realizing there's no reason to sell on an email, there's no reason to sell on a voicemail, there's no reason to sell on a text, an Instagram, a LinkedIn comment, do not sell. Get them to get back to you. Then transition that interest into the vision and the articulation of a quantitative value to exceed what you're asking for, giving them more of what they like, taking away what they don't like. And I'll give you the template to do that. Now, when we're stimulating interest, we want to use a 3-no rule, determinative upon the circumstances of the day and your knowledge of the person that you're trying to stimulate interest with. But for me, I have a 3-no rule at the stage of stimulating interest. So I try to get you to call me back once, you don't call me back. I try to get you to call me back, you don't call me back. I try to get you to call me back the third time, I leave a message that says, obviously it's not the right time, write this down. Obviously it's not the right time, call me when it is. What it's going to do is it's going to accelerate the interest that someone has an open mind that actually is interested, but time, value, and emotion is in the way at that time. And two, it's going to get the person that's never going to call you back off of your list, giving you more time to get more people to call you back. And there's one other stage of the business that we're going to use the 3-no rule. It's not in dating, but it works there too. So remember, anytime that we come to an agreement or decision with ourselves or with others, anytime it's implied, verbal, written, or with consideration, which means we have paid for it, anytime you have come to an agreement of any time, like I'm going to call you back at 2 o'clock, remember, three things will always change. Time will change, emotion will change, and value will change. And so therefore, the better that you can align time, emotion, and value after there's a verbal, written, or implied decision, the more statistically successful you'll be. And the 3-no rule allows you to realign time, emotion, and value with a concrete discipline of, hey, you told me to call you on Tuesday, or I'm calling again. Hey, obviously this isn't the right time. I'm not saying you're not interested, right? No guilting, no shame, blame, and justification. None of like, hey, you promised to call me back. You know, or worse, right? You sit at home going, when should I call him back? You know, anybody that's been a manager, director, or a VP of sales, you just hate it, right? You're like, when should I call him back? It's been, what are you talking about? Call them back immediately. Call them back when they said, you know, you tell me 2 o'clock, I'm calling again at 3, and I might wait till the next day to call for the third time and say, hey, obviously this isn't the right time. When it is, call me back. And if a person is interested, they will call you back faster because of that message. And if they're not interested, you have given them permission to be human. This is a very critical component of sales. You've given them permission not to feel bad that they changed their mind, or that they were too weak to actually tell you that they weren't interested in the first place. That's human. They're nice people. They don't want to say no, but what they don't realize is they're torturing you and they're hurting you. They're killing your pocketbook because they're so nice, they won't tell you the truth that they're not interested. So give them the opportunity and use the variable that's the kindest, which is not the right time. Who knows? Maybe tomorrow something happens and it becomes the right time. You're also saving them without making an effort that you have to somehow figure out infinite time and call them at the right time. But you left it on a positive note of, hey, this isn't the right time. When it is, call me. And when it is, they will call you, statistically increasing your success. I took a job out of sales, out of law school in sales because it had a $250,000 comp plan. I got a job for $150,000 being an oil and gas litigator in 1992 with a big oil company plus bonus, which had been plenty of money to buy my mom a house and a car back then. But I took the job in sales because it had a $250,000 comp plan. And I used time to say, I'm going to work twice as many hours, productive work, not productively be active in sales twice as long as the average guy. I'm going to learn how to be twice as efficient with my time and twice as statistically successful. This is where all this came from 35 years ago. Why? Because in productivity hours, in sales hours, if I had 16 hours of productivity, twice as efficient, made it 32, and I was twice as statistically successful using this, I would have 64 hours of productivity a day, 7 days a week. So comparatively, although I wasn't as good at sales because I was the youngest one there, I didn't have a huge network of people, so I wasn't getting people ordering from me. All the things the older guys at the company had, I beat them with time because I had 56 days of productivity every week. So when I made $1 million in that 9 months, $750,000 over my comp plan, and they gave me all the awards like they do to great salespeople to show you off so everybody hates you and wants to know how you're cheating to get there. And then they bless you by tripling your comp plan for the next year. This is how sales works. Right when all that happens, I was laughing, and my boss is like, what are you laughing at? I'm like, because I screwed you. He's like, what do you mean? I go, I didn't hit my number. He said, you did $1 million in 9 months. I said, yeah, but I worked 11 years in productivity hours. Everybody else was married with kids. They had mortgages and all that. I came out of law school broke, hungry, with one focus on my mind, how much I could sell. And so that's your personal decision, but you can use time in that manner. When we stimulate interest, whether it's email, text, our only objective is to get them to get back to us. Now they're playing in my court. You're in my home. And there's so many people that we can hit up. You'll have different strategies on LinkedIn, Instagram, email, text, in person. So what do we do now to transition interest? So someone calls us back. Hopefully after today, just giving you the tip of getting people to call you back, you have twice as many people that are calling you back and I've doubled your sales. He's not going to double your comp plan, he promised me. So we have a little bit of advantage for the end of the year or the quarter. All right, so when they call back. So now, whether it's in person, on the phone, via email or media, traditional or social media, in which I reach out to stimulate interest and get more people to call me back, I use a open-minded, open-ended question template, which I will send all of you. Write down my email address, david@dmeltzer.com. So it's David is my first name, dmeltzer.com, right up there. And I'm going to send you the open-ended question template, which you're going to use in a variety of different ways in your life, but especially to transition interest. So now I'm dealing most of the time with people that call me back. Why? Because over 80%, probably over 90, but 99% of statistics are all made up, so I just made up 80. Over 80% of the time we reach out to someone, they're not there. We don't get to talk to them. Right? You don't instantly get an email back. You don't instantly get a DM back. You definitely don't get, someone doesn't answer the phone. So we're always dealing with the reality that our job is to get people to call us back. Not like the old days. People aren't sitting at home with a wired phone answering, hey, I got a phone call. This is awesome. Right? That was the old cold calling days, why it worked. No more of that. Nobody answers. So our job is somebody calls it back, or in person, we use this too, because remember, our philosophy is, do you know anyone that can help us, not can you help me? So everybody's a prospect. Under the open-minded, open-ended question template of transitioning interest into a quantified value that exceeds what you're asking for. So how do I transition interest? I have simplified this in the best way I can. Number one rule about the open-minded question guide is that only deal with open minds. Too many people try to re-engineer a closed mind thinking you are some superhero of sales. No, you are going to have the same 1 in 1,000 chance of re-engineering a closed mind as anybody else. So why waste your time when your problem isn't people to talk to or people to get back to you? Your problem is transitioning interest to a quantified value of giving someone more of what they like or taking what they don't like. So my first qualification always is, do you have an open mind? How do we do that? Well, there's several different ways to do that. One is to look someone in the eye and smile. If they smile back, they have an open mind. One is to make fun of them, right? It's a great way. I love doing it. You know, a lot of people wear different teams, leagues, and sports on. And so I always, no matter what team it is or where it is, I'm like, oh man, I love that shirt, sweater, hat. Did you get that on sale? Right? They laugh at you, open mind. There's so many different ways. You can ask someone how they are, where they're from. Any of those first open-ended questions or comments just to determine if someone has an open mind. Now, let me tell you something about a closed mind. When we're calling and someone gives us, when we're trying to get them to call us back, call me later. Now, that's a closed mind, right? I'm busy, call me back. That's a closed mind. Remember this about a closed mind and why when we're stimulating interest to get them to come back or be interested in the stimulating interest portion, a closed mind is interesting because utilizing the three no rule, if you can get someone with a closed mind to, at the time you're talking to them, have an open mind, you're going to be way more statistically successful. Why? Because if someone has a hugely open mind like me, they have so many options, opportunities, and touches of favor, it's hard to get priority from those people. If someone has a closed mind the majority of the time, and you catch them at the time when they have an open mind, you're going to be far more statistically successful because they have very few options. And so you just got them at the right time. So we want to, number one, find the open mind. Use the three no rule to determine if they have an open mind in that stimulating of interest. Now, if they have an open mind, now we want to transition interest. So this is really basic, but I promise you, stick to it, put it into your own words, it works. Basically, the first step in the open-ended question template is, what do you do today? Pertaining to what I do. So it could be, hey, what do you know about solar? What do you know about, do you own any real estate? Something open-ended to understand what they know, do, think, say, and believe about what you do. Very open. You want them to get talking so you can continue ask other questions to learn more to get to one question. Would it help you if I did this? And sometimes it has nothing to do with what you're doing, but if you're able to say, oh, would it help you if I gave you a ride to the airport? Believe it or not, that's a value that you're providing, and it gives you more opportunity to not only learn about would it help you if I did this with our property meld or whatever, but it also gives you an opportunity to ask what question, the most valuable question that gives you exponential results. Do you know anyone that can help me? Do you know how willing someone that you give a ride to an airport or find a babysitter for when they need it, or maybe they need some water and you pick up the water for it? It's amazing. Do you know what? Oh, you know what? My cousin, he owns, 6,000 units. It's amazing. This is the world we live in today. It's different than before. So we use the open-ended template to understand, what are you doing today pertaining to what I'm doing, and seeing, would it help you if? And it doesn't matter what it is that I'm helping. Why? Because we know value is giving people more of what they like or taking away what they don't like. So if you need a babysitter, I'm taking away a problem for you. I'm providing value, which gives me a quantitative advantage of saying, do you know someone that can help me? And everybody does. You're building the community of people that are buying from you or selling for you. That's someone that's going to sell for you. Maybe you'll get someone that's going to buy from you. Now, when you have a list of leads, you know those people automatically have and can answer open-ended wise, hey, what are you doing today for specifically this? Those are different kinds of leads. But you're passing up a majority of your business by not asking everyone if they have an open mind and using the open-ended question template to articulate value to them and seeing, hey, how can I be of service to you by saying, would it help you if? Do you know anyone that can help me? And it just grows and grows and grows and grows. Once again, it's just math. The more people that you have that are growing, 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 that are calling you back, the more people statistically you'll transfer over in the exact same mechanism. The only difference is you'll get more at-bats, which means not only will you automatically get twice, if you get twice as many people to get back to you, twice as many people to transition interest, you'll get better at what you do. So it's more than two times the sales because you're going to get better at it. So this all just grows on itself in selling. So we use the open-ended question template to say, hey, what are you doing today pertaining to what I want to talk about? And would it help you if, and do you know anyone that can help me? That's transitioning interest. Once again, know that three no rule. Understand we only talk to open minds. Statistically, it doesn't make sense to re-engineer a closed mind. We give a closed mind three chances. Hopefully we get them a closed mind when they're open-minded, giving us even a greater statistical success in how many people that we close.
Since 1981, Justin has been producing world-class Bordeaux-style wines from Paso Robles on the California Central Coast. As a pioneer of the region, Justin Wines helped put Paso Robles on the winemaking map. The Justin team believes the wine should be exceptional in every aspect, which is why they use boutique winemaking practices like hand harvesting and hand sorting. With a rich history of accolades, Justin is proud to produce exceptional wines and hold the title of America's number one luxury Cabernet. Whether you're a first-time wine drinker or a seasoned aficionado, Justin has the perfect wine for every occasion. Visit justinwine.com and enter promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off your order. Justin Wines also makes the perfect holiday gifts for clients, colleagues, friends, or family. Don't miss out. Visit justinwine.com and use the promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off for a limited time.
Now we get to the third step, sharing a vision. So first is stimulate interest. Second is transition interest using the open-ended, open-minded question guide. Third is sharing a vision. Most people think you're 80% done when you share a vision. Sharing a vision to me is your ability to articulate the quantitative value of what you're asking for to exceed what you're asking for. And so there's five components in sharing a vision. One, I talked about credibility is the most important. So go through with a fine-tooth comb what you're saying, what you're presenting, everything. Just see where you or other people find holes, even if it's unintentionally overselling or confusing. You don't want people to get into the trap to search for things that are wrong. Search for reasons not to do it. You want them to search for reasons to do it. So credibility. Two, because it's value of what we like and don't like, the second most important thing beyond credibility, emotional attachment. People buy an emotion for logical reasons because we buy things that we like or get rid of what we don't like. That's emotion. Energy, emotion, people buy an emotion for logical reasons. So make sure you are connecting emotionally and find out by asking them, what do you like about what you're doing today? What don't you like? What's working for you? What's not working for you? Now you're right there. You're tagging them with emotional value. The third is the quantification of an articulation of value, and it revolves around the reasons you think and they think that you're giving them more of what you like or taking away what they don't like. There's two types of reasons or articulation of quantitative value: perceived value and bottom line. This is so many people in sales get so caught up and waste so many of the managers, vice presidents, executives' time under the context of not understanding perceived value or bottom line. Let me make this simple for you, whether you're a buyer or a seller. This will make you so much money in life. I promise you. This is what I, in speaking, has made my career. If somebody calls me and says, Dave, we want you to be a keynote speaker, how much are you? I'm $100,000. Why do I say that? The Boy Scouts of America called me. And they said, we'd like you to keynote our annual meeting, our fundraiser. It's in Syracuse, New York. We have like 4,000 people coming. It's between you and Mike Tirico from ESPN. And I said, oh, that's awesome. And I almost said, I'd love to do it because that's a big audience for a good cause. And my bottom line, I almost gave up, which was free. Right? It's for charity. aligned with what I do. I'm going to be in New York anyway, not hard to get. All these different variables. In the old Dave that didn't understand perceived value and bottom line would have said, oh my God, I want to beat out Mike Tirico. I'll do it for free. But I did. I took a breath and I said, I'm 100 grand. Whoa, that's more than Mike Tirico. I said, oh, I know, which I didn't know. I do now, you just told me. And I said, but I have a few questions. So how many people, 4,000? I said, how many times have you done this? This is, you know, the 51st or whatever. It was a ton of times. I said, what's the purpose of the annual meeting? Is it to sell tickets or to raise money? And they said, oh, no, it's for Boy Scouts. They sell out all the tickets. That's not a problem, regardless of who's the keynote speaker. But we're there to raise money. I said, how much money did you raise last year? $1.2 million. Perceived value. I said, oh, well, how about this? I said, Mike's awesome, and he would sell many more tickets than I would. He's on ESPN every day. More people on earth know who Mike Tirico is than me. He does the Masters. I'm at the Masters. Nobody knows who I am. Everybody knows who he is. So if you needed to sell tickets, I would recommend you hire Mike Tirico. But since you don't need to sell tickets, I recommend you hire me for $100,000. What are you talking about? Because I will guarantee that I will raise $2.4 million. Huh? I'll guarantee that I'll raise $2.4 million for you. Or you don't pay me. You're kidding. No, I'm not kidding. Why did I do that? Because I would have done it for free anyway. And I know I'm good at raising money. So what did they say? Well, we only have a budget of $75,000. I said, deal. I'm not sure they even called Mike Tirico back. That concept of being comfortable and confident in articulating your quantitative value of what you are giving is called your perceived value. It's not real. Nobody knows what you do and what it's really worth except for you, and it's only determined by your comfort level and confidence, which comes from practicing, discussing the reasons why people should buy your software, your service, your solution, and you to exceed what they're asking for. So credibility, emotional attachment, reasons, quantitative reasons decided by perceived value and bottom line. So if you're not asking your boss before you go into a sales thing, what is my bottom line? You're making a big mistake. Because if someone goes below your bottom line, said, I have failed you. I haven't been able to articulate the quantitative value of what I'm offering. I'm sorry. Give me a call when this is the right time and walk away. Once again, 50% of the people it'll accelerate them making a decision, usually coming back and giving you your perceived value, stopping negotiation, and 50% of the time you never hear from the person again. Meanwhile, you don't want that business. Remember, most companies, 80% of the business that you're getting in most companies will bankrupt you. What do I mean by that? 80% of the business that people get in business are either breaking even or losing money. If you only had clients that were breaking even and losing money, you would go bankrupt. So this is helping the entire company because you're qualifying the leads and generating more income for you and the company and increasing the margins so that more than 80% of the clients are actually profitable for you. And you're getting rid of the losers from the start because you're not getting into deals that are below your bottom line, which is determined by math, by finance, not by emotion. Perceived value is emotion, your emotion in theirs. You're confident and comfortable in articulating the quantitative value because you practice so much that it's easy. And so that's what we try to do in that idea of credibility, emotional attachments, reasons. And then there's a new one today called impact, especially in real estate and property side of things. If you're able to articulate a quantitative value of the impact that you're having, it can determine a sale as well. Now, I left out something that everybody asked me about called features and benefits. Capability. You don't have to feature and benefit dump anybody. And we all learn this in selling. But when you're clearly understanding and defining how do I share a vision or articulate quantitative value by being credible, by emotionally attached, finding out what you like and don't like, giving you more of what you like, taking away what you don't like, also understanding the reasons why, perceived value and bottom line of those reasons, and now impact, now it's easy because you know all the capabilities of the product, services, solutions, and people that you employ and work with. So therefore, when there's any questions, you're just infusing value into your credibility by your capability, into the emotional attachment by your capability, into your ability to quantify and articulate the quantified value of perceived value with capability and impact with capability. Capability is an arsenal that you just shoot down and add value to. You're infusing value with capability. That's all you're doing with capability. Credibility, emotional attachment, reasons, impacts, and capabilities. I also will email you that outline as well as the open-ended question template. So now that we shared a vision, we can get to Molly. It's Molly, right?
Yeah.
Thank you. So now we get to Molly's question, which is where most people fall down, right? We start looking at numbers and pipeline and all of these different deals, and we have to prioritize them, and we make things harder because we now have an energy of scarcity or desperation placed by an artificial timeline, placed by a company that has artificial P&Ls that are due by an artificial government, has artificial taxes and artificial investors, all of these things that are artificial in a sales cycle, because sales cycles work within the infinite time zone. Because why? The minute we get agreement in stimulating interest, transition interest, or share a vision, time, emotion, and value changes. That's why every single deal that I have, when someone says yes and signs it and gives me a check, I know I'm still only 20% of the way there. Why? Because 80% is managing and developing that vision. It's not just getting the check, it's being able to keep it. And so let me tell you how we can align with the time, emotion, and value that changes, that increases your statistical success and gives you more confidence and comfortability about your comp plan, the timing of the comp plan, the pipeline, etc. Is it gives you a framework to understand where I'm at in my pipeline so that I know that I'm creating the best behaviors and statistical success. And if by chance my comp plan is too high, at least I knew I did my best, learned lessons, and had fun. So what do? I create a go, no go plan. That's what I've named it. I will also send you this. So when we have a shared vision, I've been able to articulate a quantitative value to exceed what I'm asking for. I then go through, usually in a situation like this. I used to sell big CRM and ERP systems for $30, $40, even one for $100 million. And it would be like a $30,000 to $50,000 scoping, which is why I realized, wait a second, I can do this for free in a matter of seconds and get the same results of keeping someone aligned in timing, emotion, and value. So when you say yes, you sign an agreement, you pay or not pay, or maybe it's an implied yes, or a verbal yes, or it doesn't matter to me. I email you or go over with you, here's what's gonna happen next. Because I already know what's gonna happen next. It's the same 90% of the time, exact same thing that happens next. The only difference is most people don't manage and develop that expectation, so they allow the time, emotion, and value to grow arms and legs, which just increases the amount of insecurity, interference between you and what you want, to be able to provide the articulated value that exceeds what you're asking for. And it all lies within your ability to say, hey, look, I'm gonna take this in and I'm gonna give you a call tomorrow and we're gonna schedule this. And then after that, we're gonna do this. And then after that, we're gonna do this. And then you are going to manage and develop exactly what you said and also be able to take temperature of the time, emotion, and value that's changing and use the three no rule again. Wait a second, he told me that he would schedule the install on this date. Now he's not calling me back. Now, instead of making it worse, because you have no framework, no practice, no discipline, and you start letting that time, emotion, and value grow arms and legs on your side, and now you're worrying and wasting time at home instead of hitting your number, you're like, should I call him back? Shouldn't I call him back? I wonder what he's thinking. Why, he promised. Oh my God, this is personally offensive. I must really suck. Or he's an asshole, or both. That doesn't help you. But what does help you is to have a framework that says, hey, look, if you remember, the next step was we agreed to talk at 2:00 on Friday. You obviously were caught up on the other line or a meeting that you couldn't get out of. I'll be calling you back at 5:00 today by the end of the day. hey, it's 5 o'clock. Obviously, you're probably still caught into that mess. I'll give you a call tomorrow morning. Call tomorrow morning or maybe in the afternoon. I don't waste time in between. You made a commitment to me that you're going to be available to do this on this time. And I made a commitment that I'm going to do this at this time. Why waste time? Just get to the effing point and whatever feels comfortable, you know, it doesn't have to be as compelling as I am, but I find I'm very confident in the fact that I have made it clear and managed and developed the vision up front that I've actually even told them, look, I know shit happens. So if you don't answer at 2, I'm going to call back at 5. And if you don't answer at 5, I'm going to call you back at 11 o'clock the next day or so. And if you don't answer again, I'm literally going to leave you a message that says, hey, this obviously isn't the right time. When it is, let me know. Does that sound fair? They already know my 3-no rule. Increasing my statistical success, lessening the distance of resistance, lessening the waste of time for me. They're already guided into it. And I know sometimes when they get the message on the third one, they laugh because they'll call me back the next day and go, dude, you are good. I still want to move forward. You have kids. You know what happened or whatever it is. Way better than what used to happen. Should I call him back? Should I call him? Oh, you didn't call me back. Oh, I'm going to lose the deal. You don't have the deal. I'd rather be on the phone getting new deals instead of worrying about deals I don't have and feeling bad about myself and making other people feel bad about themselves because I never managed and developed the vision or allowed people to be human knowing that time, emotion, and value is constantly changing, even if we promised each other. Why do you think people get divorced? Have you ever been to a wedding and they're like, well, if things get really hard, if time, emotion, and value change in a certain way, fuck you and I'm taking half of what you have. I've never been to a wedding like that. No, you say, till death do we part. But yet still time, emotion, and value. Wait, I did not do this at my wedding and I've been married 27 years because I did it after my wedding. I strategically keep a go, no-go plan with my wife, right? I manage and develop her expectations along the way in my marriage that, hey, time, emotion, and value has changed. I know I was this person and wanted this, and you were this person and wanted this. Let's talk about this. I'm too afraid to use the 3-no rule. Kind of, like I said, it's circumstantial. You don't always use the 3-no rule depending on, right? If it's all in the pipeline, there's certain deals, that's okay. It'll be the 10-no rule, but you got to keep managing it along. So that's managing and developing the vision. That go, no-go plan is not a formal thing. I'll send you a formal one, but sometimes it's just a simple email going through what I know. And also verbally kind of just getting them comfortable with why I do that. I'm teaching them as well along the way. Time and emotion, you can see, is very, very subjective. Value is quantitative. So I will go to value if it's not time or emotion. I'll go to value and say, you know, I must not have done my job because I haven't been able to articulate the value of this to exceed what I'm asking for. Because if I did, you would not be able to see any reason that you won't want to move forward. That's one of my closes, right? Do you see any reason you won't want to move forward? Does that sound fair is another one that I've used. These are subtle ways that I say things that I know that are statistically successful that are aligned with the credibility and emotional attachment that I want. Do you know any reason? Can you see any reason you won't want to move forward? Does this sound fair? Those are two things that are credible and emotional. They're tied into actually what I do with your psychology and also the statistical success of repetition in sales. Just great words to use that are proven for years and years to work. Can you see any reason you want to move forward? Does this sound fair?